From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll learn about the candidates running for state Supreme Court. Then we'll learn about a Wisconsin special education training program facing cuts from the Trump administration.
The entire situation that's developed since February has been unfortunate and confusing and disappointing. The students are not benefiting.
Plus, we'll look at what's in Milwaukee Recreation's Spring Activities Guide.
We have this season over 30 new classes and programs in the guide, which is awesome.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks so much for joining us today. A seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court is up for election on April 1st, with early voting currently underway. The court rules on a variety of legal and political issues affecting Wisconsinites, from the structure of government to abortion and labor rights. The liberal-backed candidate Susan Crawford is running against conservative-backed candidate Brad Schimmel. Crawford began her career as an assistant attorney general for Wisconsin's Department of Justice, becoming the director of criminal appeals and then the chief legal counsel for Democratic Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle. She went on to work in private practice before winning an election for Dane County Circuit Court judge in 2018 and again in 2024. Lake Effect's Joy Powers and Sam Woods spoke with Judge Susan Crawford about the influence of money in judicial elections, judicial ethics, and what to expect from her if she wins.
Now, you've made your opinions on a variety of issues known to the public, and your previous experiences reflect these opinions in many ways. I'm thinking specifically of your views on abortion, voter ID, and Act 10. One of the questions that I think people naturally have is, why shouldn't we consider your previous experience and opinions when looking at your ability to be impartial as a justice?
Well, Joy, the difference is that for cases like Act 10 and voter ID, I was representing a client in court. I was representing their positions in making legal arguments to court. I wasn't just stating my personal opinions in some kind of a public forum. So I want voters to understand that. I also want them to understand that I believe that those were important issues and involved important rights that people have. Things like voting rights, I think, are critical to our democracy, obviously, and that I worked on important issues like that in our courtrooms and fought for them. But people need to understand that what lawyers do is advance the positions of their clients in court. And when it comes to something like abortion rights, I have never stated how I would decide any case or what my opinion is on a particular type of regulation or law restricting abortion rights. What I have talked about is my personal experiences as a mother, going through pregnancy and labor and birth, and the fact that I wanted to be able to make my own choices about my health care, and that I think that women are competent to make their own choices about their bodies and their health care. I also have talked about the fact that I represented Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and their doctors. Again, they were my client, and I was advocating for their interests, but I believe it was important work. And I was supporting their ability to continue to provide those healthcare services to women. So those all are very different than taking positions on cases or issues that may end up in front of the Supreme Court or may be in front of the Supreme Court. And that is something that really contrasts with my opponent, who has said things like that this current legal challenge to Act 10 is ridiculous, and he doesn't think it should be in the courts. And he has questioned why such a challenge should be raised now after so many years. In that way, he's literally making arguments against the party that is bringing that lawsuit. Judges should not be doing that, particularly for a case that's working its way through the court system. And he's done the same thing with the 1849 abortion law that is also currently in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He has said that he believes there is nothing wrong with that law, in his words. And again, I haven't taken a position on that law in terms of its validity, and I won't do that because it is a case to be decided by the Supreme Court.
One of the questions I'd have out of that is really, is that distinction apparent to the people of Wisconsin? Is this something that we as Wisconsinites look at as consequential, the distinction between taking a position on a specific case and making your moral standing clear? Because I'm not sure that I see quite the distinction there.
Well, let me put it this way, Joy. I believe voting is very important. I think it is a fundamental right that we exercise that makes our democracy work. That is not the same as saying some particular law or regulation about voting is or is not constitutional. What it is saying is that if I see some law and there's a claim made that it unconstitutionally restricts the right to vote, I am going to look at that very carefully. I will scrutinize it. And if I, you know, if in a particular instance I find that the constitutional right to vote is infringed, I would strike down such a law. But it is not a position on any type of particular issue or case that might be in front of the Supreme Court. And you know, a similar thing goes for things like women's right to make their own healthcare decisions. I believe those are deeply private decisions that go to the heart of just being a person and making your own decisions about your own lives. And if there are laws or regulations in a case that a party is arguing limit or take away a person's ability and to make those kinds of core decisions, that's something I would take a very careful look at. But I won't say at this point how I would decide such a case, because in any case, it really depends on what's before the court. So I always look at first the evidence and the facts to make sure that I get the facts right. I look at the law and the legal arguments made by the two parties in a case. And there, you know, there are always two parties and they're making different arguments about how the law should be interpreted. And, you know, I try to apply the law impartially and accurately to get a fair result that also incorporates common sense in the real world that we live in. So that's the same approach I would use in any of these cases. But I think that it's important for voters to know that I view, you know, things like voting rights as very fundamental and very important in the structure of our society.
So I want to talk a bit about money and campaign donations. So you've questioned Judge Schimmel's connection to big money donors and political leaders that support him, you know, like Elon Musk and President Donald Trump. But you're also getting quite a bit of money from billionaires like Governor J.B. Pritzker and George Soros. How can we trust that you are not beholden to your big money donors?
Well, you know, what I have said over and over throughout this campaign is that I'm running to be a fair and impartial justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And if people want to, or organizations for that matter, want to support my candidacy, I welcome that support, but I am not promising anything. And that is, again, there's a big contrast with my approach and Judge Schimmel's approach. He entered this race way back in November of 2023. That was about 7 months before I announced a candidacy, and immediately was talking about how he was going to nationalize the race and how he was going to go out and solicit support from conservative groups that he made connections with as a Republican attorney general in Wisconsin. So he was out there immediately and has said things like, oh, I have been begging on my knees and wearing out my knee pads, trying to get these wealthy conservative interests to support him. And now, as it turns out, we have Elon Musk in the race who has contributed over $10 million to Brad Schimmel's campaign basically taken over the campaign, is running TV ads, digital ads, including deceptive ads that are designed to make it look like they are ads supporting me, but are ascribing to me, far left positions that I have never taken and never spoken about, even. These kind of dirty trick types of ads that are intended to try to deceive voters. And they have Elon Musk's PACs have paid canvassers out going door to door over the state. They're hanging door knockers that say things like, put Brad Schimmel on the Supreme Court to support the Trump agenda. And, you know, all of that money dwarfs any contribution made by not only any of my supporters, but any contribution ever made in any kind of state race in Wisconsin. It is just completely unprecedented to have an outsider coming in and trying to take over a race like this. Elon Musk is really trying to buy a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
You said that you wanted stronger recusal rules for Supreme Court justices. Can you give an example of what that would look like?
What I actually said, Sam, is that I would welcome proposals to strengthen the ethical standards for judges. And that could involve recusal or it could involve other judicial rules. You know, there's a whole set of Supreme Court rules that are applicable to judges. And it is, I don't think, appropriate for me as a candidate to try to lay out some proposals right now. I don't have anything specifically in mind, but I have always believed that there's room for improvement in areas like this. And as a justice on the Supreme Court, I would welcome proposals that seek to make the current rules stronger and to make sure that judges and justices are held accountable. And what I said in the debate as well is that we see what happens when there are not adequate ethical rules, looking at the United States Supreme Court, where public confidence in the court has really plummeted because you see justices doing things like accepting luxury trips or flying partisan flags outside of their homes. And as a result, voters, the members of the public don't trust the Supreme Court to make decisions based on the law when they see that kind of thing happening. They believe justices are on the take or that they have personal motives in some of their decisions. So obviously that's wrong. And we want to make sure that Wisconsin has strong ethical code in place so that people in Wisconsin can be confident in the decisions that they make.
So switching gears a little bit to how you'd work with colleagues on the bench if you're elected. So the personalities on the Wisconsin Supreme Court have been at odds with one another going back at least to the 1990s. And from the outside, it kind of looks like a toxic work environment, like these folks that don't really work well together. How do you see yourself navigating that environment if elected?
Well, first of all, unlike my opponent, Brad Schimmel, I'm not openly attacking justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Brad Schimmel, a couple of months ago, said that the majority of justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the justices who are considered the current majority, were too emotional to make a decision in an abortion law case. Those four justices all happen to be women. He has criticized them repeatedly for, in his words, being like, you know, radical and left-wing and all this kind of stuff, and saying that they don't make decisions based on the law. So he's repeatedly attacked them over and over, and even said some nastier things that I am simply not going to repeat, but real personal attacks on the justices. So number one, I am not doing that. I am not attacking any of the current justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There are some justices on the court that I will likely disagree with frequently, but I will be a respectful colleague. I'm interested in what they have to say and what their positions are and how they defend them. In my mind, when you have a court that is composed of a number of different justices, it is really important to listen to those different perspectives. If for no other reason, it can help you to sharpen up and defend your own positions if you understand, you know, how somebody who disagrees with you supports their own positions. So I'll treat everybody with respect. I think it is important for the court to be as collegial as possible. And also as a justice, I intend to not attack personally the positions or the, you know, character of other justices on the court, which we occasionally do see, unfortunately, in dissents and things like that. That's just not my style. I prefer to look at the issues and criticize arguments, but I will never go after the person. I could just add to that briefly as well that I have done a lot of work in the state court system, serving on statewide court committees, things like the Judicial Training Committee, a committee that was addressing a crisis that we're having in the state court system with an insufficient number of court reporters and other, these are all volunteer tasks and that I've put a lot of time into, a lot of extra time. And in serving on some of these committees, I've worked with other justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and not just justices who you would consider in the current majority, but people like Chief Justice Annette Ziegler, Justice Rebecca Bradley on some of these projects. And, you know, we've worked very professionally. So I have some relationships with the justices already due to those kinds of projects that I've been on.
I think that gets to an interesting point. A lot of the work of the Wisconsin Supreme Court is actually administrative. There's a lot that the court does that isn't something you're going to see in a case itself. And as you say, this is about relationships. This is about how you're able to work with your coworkers. I think I'm picking up what you're putting down about Judge Schimmel, but I'm interested to know, what can the Wisconsin people expect of a Justice Crawford if elected? What can we expect from your work?
Yeah, well, I think my record really speaks for itself, Joy. As I said, I have been, since I have become a judge, I have been, you know, very deeply involved and interested in the state court system, in those kind of more administrative roles that the Supreme Court oversees as the head of the state court system. And I, you know, when I work on committees like the Judicial Education Committee, and that might involve being part of the planning team for a judicial conference on, you know, something like family law or juvenile law or some other topic. When I'm sitting down with other judges to work on those kinds of projects, I don't ask them, you know, are you a Republican or Democrat, or are you a liberal or conservative? And the other judges aren't asking me those questions either. We just sit down and get the work done. And that's what I would intend to do as a justice on the Supreme Court as well, just as I've always done since I've become a judge, and just as I've done throughout my career in working on other matters with people.
Judge Crawford, thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with us.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much. Thanks for the great questions, and I hope you guys have a great day. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Judge Susan Crawford is a candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court. She spoke with Lake Effect Sam Woods and Joy Powers. This interview has been edited for Time. You can hear the full conversation at WUWM.com. For most high-profile elections in Wisconsin, WUWM interviews candidates to learn more about who they are and what they hope to do if elected. But what do you do when one of those candidates won't agree to an interview? To ensure our listeners are getting the information they need, we put together non-interviews. Essentially, we look at the issues at stake in the election, look at what a candidate has previously said about those issues, and ask the questions that remain. Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Judge Brad Schimmel didn't agree to an interview with us by deadline. Schimmel is currently a circuit court judge in Waukesha County. He started his career as an assistant district attorney for Waukesha County and was then elected as a Republican to become the Waukesha County District Attorney. In 2014, he won election as a Republican for Wisconsin Attorney General. He lost re-election, which is when he was appointed to his current judgeship by then-Republican Governor Scott Walker. In the officially nonpartisan Wisconsin Supreme Court race, Schimmel is backed by Republicans, and his opponent, Susan Crawford, is backed by Democrats. Here's our non-interview of Judge Schimmel.
Judge Brad Schimmel has said the naked partisanship of the current Supreme Court is what inspired him to get into the race. Much of his criticism has focused on liberal-backed Justice Janet Protasiewicz, her 2023 campaign, and how she's ruled as a justice on the bench. Here he is at the WISN debate talking about this issue.
I watched in 2023 how a candidate who ended up winning on the Supreme Court promised on the campaign trail how they would rule on cases that weren't even filed yet. And then, worse, once she was in the majority on the court, that majority started going through that political agenda. It's critical in our constitutional republic that the political branches do the politics. The legislature makes the law, the executive enforces it. Sorry to do the high school civics, but I think some people need to know this. The judiciary doesn't get involved in the politics. The judiciary approaches cases objectively.
But Schimmel has made his own partisan views very clear. During his time as a nominally nonpartisan judge, he has remained a vocal supporter of Republican President Donald Trump. In 2020, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled against candidate Trump's bid to overturn the election won by Joe Biden. As a candidate, Schimmel told his supporters that Trump was, quote, screwed over by that decision. A rally for Schimmel days before early voting began for the April election featured Donald Trump Jr., and Judge Schimmel was photographed posing in front of a giant, inflatable Donald Trump, which held a sign that read, Vote Brad Schimmel, Supreme Court. Less than a week later, President Trump publicly endorsed Schimmel's campaign. Trump ally and billionaire Elon Musk also poured millions of dollars into the race, supporting Schimmel. And of course, before becoming a judge, Schimmel was a Republican politician for more than a decade.
Here are the questions we have for Judge Schimmel. In your view, why is campaigning with Republican political leaders less partisan than your opponent Susan Crawford's record? If you're concerned about the impact of partisanship on the court, how do you justify your close relationship with the GOP? Given your vocal support of President Trump and his public endorsement of your campaign, how can we trust you to rule fairly on any case involving him or his administration?
Another critique Schimmel has made is about candidates seemingly signaling how they would rule on specific cases if elected. Schimmel has repeatedly taken to criticizing Justice Protasiewicz for doing just that. But during the WISN debate, when asked about the upcoming referendum on making voter ID a part of Wisconsin's constitution, he had this to say on how he plans to vote.
I'm going to vote yes, okay? Now, voter integrity laws are critically important. The legislature has a solemn responsibility to put those laws in place, and we should all expect as voters that those laws are going to be implemented the way they're passed.
If history is an indication, there could be further court battles on Wisconsin's voter ID law that make their way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Not only has Schimmel made it clear how he intends to vote, but as Wisconsin's attorney general, he also defended the state's voter ID law in court.
Our questions for Judge Schimmel include, how can we expect you to be impartial on this issue? How can you criticize your liberal colleagues for making their opinions on issues known when you're engaging in the same behavior? And given your stated belief that justices should appear unbiased, will you recuse yourself on any case involving voter ID?
Partisanship and perceived bias go hand in hand with the next issue, campaign funding. Schimmel has criticized his opponent, Judge Susan Crawford, over the wealthy donors that have funded her campaign, including George Soros and J.B. Pritzker. But he has been notably less interested in talking about his own wealthy financiers, specifically Elon Musk, the world's richest man, and a close advisor to President Donald Trump. Musk has spent more than $14 million on this race. When asked about Musk's well-funded support at the WISN debate, Schimmel attempted to avoid the question by focusing on Crawford's donors.
Outside help that comes is not something I control. I'm It is expensive and it's difficult to get your message out on the airwaves to all the voters of Wisconsin, but there's a difference here. My opponent was supported by George Soros.
Soros, a popular target for anti-Semitic and right-wing conspiracy theories, has spent less than a tenth of what Musk has on this race. Musk also has a case that will go before the Wisconsin Supreme Court that could have a huge impact on his ability to do business in the state. So our questions for Judge Schimmel, given the vast amounts of money that Elon Musk has given in support of your campaign, will you recuse yourself from any case he's involved in? Why do you believe it's appropriate to cast doubt on your opponent's campaign because of her support from billionaires? And shouldn't you be held to the same standard? And what do you believe are the ethical implications of the vast amounts of money in this race?
This gets to another big issue on the Wisconsin Supreme Court: ethics and recusal rules. Currently, Wisconsin Supreme Court justices are responsible for deciding whether they should personally recuse themselves from a case. Recusal refers to removing oneself from a case when there is an appearance of a conflict of interest.
Justices don't have to recuse from cases involving parties who've donated to their campaign. In fact, a donation is explicitly not a reason for a justice to recuse from a case. Judge Schimmel hasn't said if he would recuse on cases involving big donors, including Elon Musk. And he had this to say about the court's current recusal rules.
The only person who can decide whether a Supreme Court justice should recuse from a case is that Supreme Court justice. So you're electing someone to a 10-year term, and if you're not sure that they'll be objective, or you're not sure that they'll recuse on the cases they can't, you better be careful about giving them 10 years.
Our questions for Judge Schimmel. Do you think it's appropriate for justices to rule on cases where one of the parties involved has given them millions of dollars in campaign contributions? How can we trust that you aren't beholden to your big money donors? How would you amend the court's recusal rules if given the chance?
During the campaign, Judge Schimmel has repeatedly cast doubt on the integrity of liberal-leaning justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Notably, in a conversation about a hearing on abortion rights in Wisconsin, he accused the all-female liberal-leaning justices of being, quote, driven by their emotions, and critiqued their appearances and the tone of their voices. During the debate, he continued his attack on the liberal-leaning justices who were sitting in the front row.
I didn't plan to run for Wisconsin Supreme Court, but after I watched what happened in 2023, when the court threw away objectivity and began going through a political agenda, I resolved to get in this race.
Critics have pointed to contentious relationships among the justices as one of the reasons the court has heard so few cases in recent sessions. This has a real impact on the lives of Wisconsinites awaiting justice. Our question for Judge Schimmel: how do you intend to work with a group of people that you've spent more than a year attacking in public?
As Wisconsin decides the ideological balance of the state Supreme Court, these are the questions we're left with. Election Day is April 1st, and early voting is happening now.
You can find information about both candidates for state Supreme Court in our voter guide at wuwm.com. Did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen on demand. Later in the show, we'll learn about some of the classes and programs being offered this spring by Milwaukee Recreation. But first, we'll hear from a special education teaching student about potential cuts to the program he's attending at UW-Madison. Keep listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. A training program at UW-Madison for special education teachers is among the hundreds of grant programs caught up in cuts made by the Trump administration. The year-long residency program pays students while they earn their master's degree in special education and work alongside teachers in Milwaukee public schools. The program is designed to train 36 special education teachers for MPS over 3 years. Program directors got word in February that the program's funding had been cut, and that's currently tied up in court. John Carlos Sanger transferred to UW-Madison for the program. He was previously earning a degree in social studies education at UW-Milwaukee. He joins WUWM education reporter Catherine Kokel to share why he decided to do the program and starts by sharing how it works.
They wanted to bring in students to the classroom and get them passed as fast as possible to fill the needs that are the special education individuals who are desperate in our state for those positions to be filled. So when you're working in Wisconsin, you have to pay back, obviously, your time for the program because we are in such a crisis for special education teachers. I personally think that if there's a need and you have the ability, you should stand up and do something if at all possible. The other thing that I wanted to do with that is get in the classroom. I didn't want to wait another year and a half. And this program allowed me to be in the classroom while taking school at the same time and graduate me within a year versus a year and a half. So I transferred in under the understanding that I could get this program done in 14 months. I could be in the classroom while I was doing it. I could be earning some money. And on top of all of that, I could end up with a master's. So that's kind of the journey I got here. And I found out about this program. I was already 3 months behind the game in applying, but I made a really solid case. And I really wanted them to understand it was my background that made me want to do special education over social studies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And 14 months in and out is remarkable for a master's program. So I definitely see the intrigue. This shouldn't be a difficult question, I think, to answer, because just hearing you talk about this, it's so clear how passionate you are about it. But why do you want to go into special education?
So I grew up in a resource room, which is coded language that we use to not identify our students as the special education room or the room that people go to with needs to have those needs serviced. Because I had an individualized educational plan myself when I grew up. I was diagnosed with dyslexia, which is considered a single language disability, as well as OHI, other health impairment, which for me took its form of ADHD. So I had my own issues growing up. And having a case manager, the thing that an IEP teacher becomes and is, they become a person in your life that's your advocate, they're your support system, they are the person you go to in school when you have a problem. I had a person who is no longer with us, she passed away. They were my person. And in high school, I was able to go to that person and say, I need this and this in order to get this paper done. And I need a space to do that, whether that be my text-to-speech, whether that be auditory listening devices so I could read the questions or have them read to me. That person provided that service to me. And along the way, I've had a lot of people tell me that I couldn't do a lot of things. One of those things was actually teach. They said I could never become a teacher just because my disability would hold me back. There were a lot of other people in this specific field that laughed at the idea that I couldn't do something because of my inability. They just refuted and refused to believe that I couldn't do something yet. I may not be able to do it in the moment, but that doesn't mean that I won't be able to do it at all. That is the person I want to be for someone else. The person that says, you can't do this now, but I'm going to be here the entire time we figure it out until we do what we need to do for you to be able to say, I can do it. I don't want to see doors closed on students like myself. I want them to have as many opportunities as my master's degree will allow me to have. So I find it really hard to not want to stand up because someone stood up for me and those are the shoulders I'm standing on right now. And I want somebody to crawl up my back and stand on my shoulders someday and say, Mr. Sanger, help me. He was my person.
Yeah, I get you. Are you able to / do you want to share the name of the person who worked with you when you were a kid that you hold in such high regard?
Her name was Mrs. Brueger, and she changed my life. And she said it in a simple sentence. I was having trouble with a word. I'll never remember what it was. It was a multisyllabic word. And I asked her, why can't we just use a different word that means the same thing and it's just easier to spell? She looked at me with this reproachful look that just said, "Your writing is too beautiful to ever dumb down for anyone. Promise me your spelling won't be the reason why you don't write the way you want to." And that cut right to the core for me. I wish I could say thank you more. I wish she could see me graduate. I wish she could see my students succeed and graduate too. I wish she would know that all those hours of work that no one talks about, no one cares, and no one thanked her for paid off.
Those are the people whose names we always remember, right? Like, no one ever forgets their favorite teacher. And so I wanted to give her the credit where credit is due there. I wonder if we could transition a little bit to talking about the last 2 months. The last month, the residency program received a letter in February saying that its funding had been cut. That is, as it stands right now, on hold due to a temporary injunction by a judge. What was going through your mind when you and the other residents found out that the funding for this program would be cut?
There were a lot of emotions when we heard that, a lot of confusion as to why and to what purpose and to what production this would lead to. And none of those had satisfying answers. The entire situation that's developed since February has been unfortunate and confusing and disappointing because it's not yielding any kind of production. The students are not benefiting from this. There is no one who benefits from doing this. And the entire point of the grant was to fill what's already been classified as an emergency because we don't have enough special education teachers in the state of Wisconsin. That need didn't go away by cutting our funding. The need just grew because you just cut off 2 more years of potential special education teachers being created. I don't see how this helps students who are in wheelchairs or are blind or deaf or have autism or have learning disabilities. How does this service them? And if they're not being serviced, do you think they just go away? I don't see a replacement idea. I don't see any kind of alternative being presented. The argumentation to do it doesn't address either of those problems. So I guess my question is, why? Why do it? Other than to score political points, why? Because it doesn't help and it only harms. It doesn't add value to the classroom by reducing teachers in the classroom for students who need more support. It leaves classroom teachers with less support. It can create a disruptive environment that has no backstop to it. And none of the people who have decided to cut these fundings have any understanding of the impact that funding is doing because they didn't study this long enough to make that determination. They saw a number that they didn't want to spend and said, cut. It wasn't, what did that money do? It didn't ask, what was the output of that money? How is this impacting on the ground? There was no study done on to see what would be the cost-benefit analysis of doing this. What I would like is for the government to remember its job, which is to help facilitate serving its people. And that's what I do, and that's what I want to do for a living, is service and be a member of my community, and they should support that.
Would you be able to do this program if there wasn't a stipend attached, if there wasn't a stipend that's paying you to do this residency?
That would be incredibly challenging. I mean, very, very challenging to expect any human to go 14 months without pay, taking on a master's level debt. In my cohort alone, we have a lot of people with families that are trying to put food on the table. Without that stipend to support those that we love and to support ourselves, taking that away, it baffles me that they're arguing over numbers when we're getting the stipend of that of a first-year teacher. We're not getting stipends of that of a 20-year veteran. We're getting that of a first-year right where they should be when they start kind of stipend. to take that away and make someone live for $0 and do all the work that we do, you know, that just seems a little unnecessary. And we pay it back in time. This is the other hook to that stipend. I'm there for 3 years after this. It's not like I'm not just going to have to pay back the money. It's that I have to pay it back in time as well. For me, they're gonna say I only have to do 3 years. They're getting 30 out of me. And they could adjust it tomorrow and say, oh, well, we want 15 years out of you. I would have said, show me where to sign.
John Carlos Sanger is earning his master's degree in special education at UW-Madison. He spoke with WUWM education reporter Catherine Kokel. After the Trump administration cut the special education grant program's funding in February, 8 states sued the federal government. A judge temporarily halted the cuts, but the program remains in limbo. We've got a new season of Bubbler Talk going, and we need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at wuwm.com. We'll take one more break, and then we'll look at what's in Milwaukee Rec's spring guide. That's next on Lake Effect on WUWM. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you squint hard enough, you can see spring. And on our best days, you can actually feel it. Besides warming temperatures, it also means the Milwaukee Recreation Spring Guide is now available. This season's guide includes dozens of new classes and programs. WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez went to Hamilton High School to drop in on some classes and learn about this season's offerings. We'll hear first from Erica Wasserman, Milwaukee Rec's recreational manager.
We're getting together because we love to talk about the new drops. And so we've got the spring drop in front of us, the recreation guide. Does anything stand out? Is there anything you want to highlight?
We have this season over 30 new classes and programs in the guide, which is awesome. It really gives our community a lot of different things to try and a variety of options. A couple of the things in there that I think are really cool are a couple of our aquatics program offerings. We are offering a class called Floga. Floga is basically yoga in the water on a glide board. A glide board is, think of like a surfboard, longer, sturdier than a surfboard, but you're doing yoga on top of that board, which is in the water.
As I age, I'm learning all about stability.
Yeah, it's all about the core.
It's all about the core.
It is all about the core. Well, I just want to put in one more aquatics shout out, urban line dancing in the water. So you might be saying like, wow, line dancing, like that doesn't sound very difficult. That doesn't really sound like a workout. But when you're doing it in the water and you have that resistance element of the water, it can make it a real challenge.
I'm going to open up the guide real quick.
Okay.
So I signed up for my spring classes. Okay. You'll be very proud of me.
Yeah.
I think one of the last times we had talked or I had featured, you all were introducing sound baths.
Yes.
And the sound baths filled right up.
Yes.
I got into Washington.
You did? That's awesome. For the spring?
For the spring.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
So amazing.
Which also, like, shout out is free, which I did not know. So out of all the classes I signed up for, this was one of the free ones, which is incredible. So can you talk to me also about the pricing structure and how accessible the classes are for residents and what the goal is kind of even to offering free classes?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look in our guide, you will see a wide variety of price points, anywhere from free to, you know, those more, maybe a little bit more expensive one-time workshop classes. And really what we try to do at Milwaukee Recreation is we try to offer something for everybody. With what you're saying, the sound bath, that's a free program through our community wellness program. So through that program, we try to offer classes that are free or at a really reduced price to introduce people to the different types of wellness programming that we have available, to get them moving and to really offer classes in all areas of the city to really make it inclusive for everybody. So we're really excited about the sound baths. We started with just one location at Hawthorne Glen, and now we've expanded to a couple of different locations, and you got into the Washington one. And I have to really give a shout out to our instructor. We only have one sound bath instructor. Her name is Camille, and she does work all over the city. So not just with Milwaukee Recreation, but all over the city. And she's wonderful, and she loves sharing her kind of talent, if you will, with people. So I'm really excited to have you try it and get your feedback.
As Erica said, spring classes just started this past weekend, which meant I was able to drop into a few. I heard down the hall sneakers squeaking like cheese curds and a ball dribbling. Youth basketball was in session.
I'm Donovan Rhymes, and we're at Milwaukee Hamilton High School doing rec. So this is a basic introductory class to the kids. Some of them are brand new to playing basketball, so we're just learning the steps and all the little drills of basketball.
What do you expect from these kids and, like, the families today? Like, any Giannis, like, Euros or Dame stepbacks? Like, what should we expect out here?
Some of them going to try and shoot like they Steph Curry, you know, from range. They all love to shoot threes. And because the courts are low, they're going to try and dunk. So, yeah, I expect to see a little bit of that today. Every started class, we go through our warm-up. So that's the dynamic exercises and stretches like that. And then after we're done with that, we go through our basic ball handling. So we'll do left hand, right hand dribbling, stuff like that. And then go through the three main passes of basketball. We got bounce pass, chest pass, and overhead. So just teaching them the fundamentals of the game throughout the day.
And any message to potential parents that are like, what should I do with my kid on a Saturday morning who loves to hoop?
Bring them here. Bring them to Milwaukee Hamilton at the rec and bring them to me. And we can see how much they like it. See how much they like basketball.
So all we're doing is running as fast as we can from this baseline to that baseline and back, okay? Down and back, go. Down and back, go.
My name is Tay. I'm here with my son, Demir. You know, I just brought him here because I know that this is something that he loves to do. He loves to play basketball and be watching it all the time, but he just got to learn the fundamentals of it.
Who's Demir's favorite player?
Demir's favorite player is Giannis and Steph Curry. Yeah.
What are you hoping that he gets out of a class like this, too?
I'm hoping that he just get his jump shot way better. And he practice on it and just, you know, just really just know that, you know, when he what he need to learn is to play basketball, you got to have fun, but you got to love it at the same time, too. So, you know, that's what I'm hoping that he get out of this right here.
All right, you guys, finish up and then go get some water. Go get some water. Go get some water.
We're on the community wellness page. And as you said, like, look, everything on this page is new. Juicing, breastfeeding, women's wellness warriors, hip hop step aerobics, infant bonding. You have all these classes. And I know that as you were talking about with Camille, like, you really rely on instructors and people from the community coming in and filling this. Can you talk to me a little bit about the folks that lead these classes?
Yeah, I would love to do that. So we've done a lot of work over the last year trying to really connect with Milwaukee organizations and different groups to try to bring some of those people that are really experts at what they do into Milwaukee Recreation. We're either hiring them or we're contracting them. My recreation supervisor has done an amazing job of really working with some of these groups and finding them. So, for example, we do have a breastfeeding preparedness with Mood. So Mood is, you can look that up online. That's an organization led by Paisley Lucas. So she's amazing. She's offering these classes for us for free and just like a really great resource, I think, for moms in the community. We have a women's wellness warrior class, which really talks about kind of public safety in the community and really just like being aware of your surroundings and being an advocate for yourself. That's a class taught by John. John's been with us now for a year, so he does a lot of other work in the community as well. And we're just so thankful to be partnering with some of these amazing people because I think there's so much talent in Milwaukee. And it's like we need to find that and use that so we can share it with people.
I feel like this is a question I always have to end on then. And that is, what are you hoping to see in the summer guide? Or what should folks expect to see in the summer guide? Or you're dreaming of or hoping that could see a Milwaukee rec guide in the future?
One of the things that we're offering, it's actually kind of a part of our spring and summer programming, is a brand new event for families called the Family Day of Play. It's happening on May 31st. So again, kind of right in between our spring and our summer session. This is happening at WIC Playfield, which was just newly renovated, amazing spaces. There's a splash pad. There's new playground equipment. There's basketball courts. There's new baseball fields. So we're programming this new event. It's really a chance for families to come out and engage in some of that traditional play that they maybe don't do anymore. So we're going to have some traditional kind of yard games, potato sack races, water balloon tosses, but we're also trying to contract with some local businesses to maybe get, I don't want to like give it away because it's still in the works, but like one of those inflatable bouncy house obstacle courses, one of those large rock walls. We're trying to really make it fun for kids, fun for families to come out and do something exciting. And this is the first time that we've offered something like this. So we're hoping that people come out for it.
Erica Wasserman is Milwaukee Rec's recreational manager. She spoke with WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez about the Rec's Spring Guide. And that wraps up Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll continue to help you prepare for next week's election with an explainer on the state referendum that you'll see on the ballot. Plus, Chirp Chat explores all of the different kinds of nests that birds in Wisconsin make. Thank you so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.